Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Logbook podcast, where we uncover the strategies and insights driving extraordinary business growth. Today, we're joined by Charlie Saffro, CEO and founder of CS Recruiting, a specialized firm connecting top talent with companies in the logistics, transportation, and supply chain industries. With over a decade of experience as a human connector, Charlie has grown her company from a one-person operation to a team of 40. Beyond recruitment, she's also a TEDx speaker on human-centered leadership, a passionate advocate for workplace culture, and she brings her unique perspective as a female entrepreneur to help companies understand that business is personal, a philosophy that's at the heart of her approach to talent acquisition and retention. Charlie, it's great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Zach. That was such a nice bio. I appreciate all the research, but nice to be here and happy to chat with you.
Appreciate that. I think perhaps like the best place to like start would be to perhaps give like everyone a bit of an introduction around like your background. You've obviously been in this space for like quite a while, so I think that's probably the best place to start this from.
Yeah, and I'll give you the shortened version of it because obviously, I was born and no, I'm just kidding.
Worries.
I, out of college, I actually started in the marketing industry. I worked in an ad agency for about 6 years, had my first son, and at the time, my husband had recently started a business with his brother that just happened to be in the trucking and technology industry. So after I had my first son, I went back to my marketing role. I liked it, but it just didn't feel worth it, I
Good.
guess. Like I wanted to be a working mom, but it was a grind with a lot of travel. So I asked my husband and my brother-in-law if I could work for them. My brother-in-law graciously agreed. My husband was a little skeptical, but I ended up starting on their team when they were very small. They had about 8 employees, and my goal was to do some marketing and support their sales initiatives. And within just a couple months of joining their team, they brought on a partner who just had a really aggressive growth strategy, and they needed hire. And so this, Zach, was early 2000s. They looked around and said, who has capacity to help us find people, look at resumes, interview? And I said, I've never done it before, but I could probably figure it out. I will say it was probably much easier to teach myself how to recruit than it would be now, because I was relying on like literally Craigslist, and I was hanging up flyers with my number and email and coffee shops, but helped grow their company to well over 100 employees. They sold the business, and I kind of unintentionally spun off my own recruiting agency. I say unintentionally because it was very organic. When I stopped working for this new company, I still had a network of talent. I was new to LinkedIn because now we're in like 2010, and I was getting opportunities. So I seized those and kind of created a side hustle. And when the side hustle got too big for me, I had that moment of, what am I going to do? And it's either grow or walk away. And so for the past 15 years, I have been growing our recruiting firm. I landed in this niche of logistics, transportation, supply chain, and that's where I've stayed and where I've just become really passionate about helping companies hire and helping people find their dream job. Over the last 15 years, we've grown our business. We work nationwide. We work with large and small companies all over the country. And just to distinguish, we're not helping them, find truck drivers per se, more so the executives and professionals that are really running a truck
Within.
company or a manufacturing company, or division. So yeah, that's really where I am today, not where I ever thought I would be, but you just kind of go where the path takes you.
Yeah, that's actually like a really interesting path. Like you were in marketing and then you're in like the somewhat trucking supply chain, like recruiting side of things. Like I love the fact that you mentioned that, like I'll figure it out. And I feel like there's a lot of like marketers, like operators that they just have this mindset. They don't know something, they'll figure it out. And you've done exactly that. You've went from like a complete like career shift from being like the marketing space to now doing like recruiting, staffing, et cetera. And I guess like one of the questions I'd be a bit curious about, was there like any skills that you've had in like that marketing role that you felt really like helped you like apply it to like the recruiting, staffing, just like get people? Because then I know you mentioned like obviously Craigslist, like just giving out like flyers, et cetera, which is obviously a bit different there.
No, that's such a great question. I would say, I mean, when I tell the story, it seems like I made a huge leap that I went from advertising to transportation recruiting, but the skills were the same, Zach. Like, and so I would say my number one, learning is like when you are in a service industry and you are providing a service, it's kind of all the same. And what you when you're selling one service versus another, you're not dealing with a tangible product or inventory. You're selling yourself. You're selling a relationship and trust. And I think I learned that at a very young age because, I was consulting clients on ad strategies. Maybe every so often I had a, a tangible coupon to pass over. But beyond that, it's very subjective work. So I think just recognizing that the service industry is about networking, connecting, building relationships, it's really the same as what I do in recruiting.
Yeah,
And
that's
to
fair.
your point, yeah, I think being in advertising, I was not a artist or graphic designer. I was more on the account side of the business, but it definitely taught me to be scrappy, I would say, and a nicer word for that is resourceful. But I had a chance to be around a lot of creative people. I saw them figure it out. I learned a lot of new things. And I think that's always just been my mindset is like, yeah, network, connect, build relationships, but also think outside the box because everything is figure outable.
I love that. And you've made like that perfect transition where you're already in that industry with obviously like your brother-in-law and your husband in like the trucking space and logistics. 'Cause I feel some people, because we've worked like recruiting companies and some of them are going to be like really broad, but they're going to work literally like everyone. But I feel you have to find like that expertise that you have. And I feel that you've been able to first work in that space directly. So you've got like an understanding of being someone like in the shoes of, like the companies that you work with, candidates, etc. So when you transition doing it for like your own company, you had a much better understanding compared to like a lot of other companies that are just trying to do this for like everyone, like a one size fits all type approach.
Exactly. And that's where, I've learned in the last 2 years that no industry is recession proof. Even the transportation and supply chain sectors have been really hurting and just the ripple effect of the economy. But I was questioned about that a lot when I first started. And people would say, like, so you only recruit in trucking? Like, wow, you're doing yourself a disservice. And one, I don't think people realize just how enormous
It's
transportation,
major.
supply chain, logistics, like it goes, well into material procurement, manufacturing, distribution. But also fast forward post-pandemic, I think people now just have a better appreciation, like how did my Amazon package actually get on the door and where did it come from? And I really don't think that the niche we play in, I really believe it has unlimited opportunity. And I like, going deep and training a team to be masters at what they do and really specialize and be those experts. So, yeah, it's been interesting. I created a service, a niche needed, and now, I mean, there's several companies that do what we do, several huge recruiting firms that have a supply chain division, but yeah, something about that, just that moment and being at the right place, right time.
No, that's fair. And I guess just going back to what you were saying earlier with like the relationship, like personal, etc. One thing like I'd really love to touch on is really your philosophy around business is personal. And you've even had like your TEDx talk, which was specifically like focused on that. I'd love to perhaps understand or perhaps just like have you unpacked what that actually means in practice when it comes to companies trying to like attract and also like retain talent.
Yeah, I mean, my perspective comes from a lot of observation. So, in, 20 years of recruiting, our team has talked to so many job seekers, most of them miserable, wanting a new opportunity. But then we also talk to people who are like, I love my job, and this is why, and this is what it would take to leave. But we're also talking to leaders and decision makers and understanding how they plan or don't plan to hire and, their strategies and processes. And for so many years, like, people would just call us and be like, I don't care, just get me a body. Like, I just need a warm body in this chair who's going to pick up the phone and make 100 calls a day. And I would take that direction early on until I really immersed myself in these relationships and just my knowledge of the industry. And it's people. When you're in a service industry, yes, technology is helping us advance, but it is about people. And I believe organizations don't look at employees for who they are beyond their title enough.
Yeah.
It starts with the leader, but it really is at all levels. And it's just this idea of like, I don't know, I was raised to like be nice to the janitor. In my high school, the janitor and the principal had the same authority to me because they were humans and they had emotions and things going on. And so I think that's my approach with business is I know a lot about my employees, probably more than most leaders, and it may be extreme, but so many leaders don't know anything about their team. They don't know if they're parents, they don't know where they were born or raised, what culture they're part of. And we make that a huge priority because that is what connects us as a team. It's what connects each other, and it's how we stand out because we're individuals, really working towards something bigger. And that I would say has just been it's like in our DNA as a company and what we really try to encourage other leaders to do. And I'm talking simple things. It's how was your weekend? Do anything fun? You don't have to open up and tell me your life story, but if you told me that this weekend you went to a concert and then, oh, what concert? And we have a conversation and we love the same music, like that's our connection for from here on out. And when you do that with employees, they feel seen, they feel important, they feel recognized, and that's what the workplace is just severely missing right now.
Yeah, like remembering these little details as well. Like they might tell you something. There's a wedding coming up. Like you want to basically be involved in their life in some shape or form. Like obviously not like too involved where it's like a breach of
Right.
privacy, but being like careful, like somewhat like thoughtful and caring about like your employees and somewhat just. You're becoming a better leader by doing so because your employees are going to feel that you actually value them as a person and they will want to perform like better. But I think that's overall, like, yeah, we need more of that like human component, especially with like AI coming into play.
Yeah.
It's important more than ever. Like
It
there's
is.
going to be more job, more opportunities, but if we somewhat start lacking of that component of like the human touch, like human, like business is human, as you mentioned, then I think that's going to affect the performance of companies, the morale of employees, and all around. It's just going to be a bad experience.
Totally, totally. And there's so many little tactics, and big tactics that, if you had a huge budget and you want this whole engagement program, like that's going to really focus on connecting and building these relationships. But I would say the simplest thing that I've done as a leader is I meet with everyone on my team every quarter, 15 minutes, no agenda, and the conversation starts. I don't have metrics in front of me. I don't have numbers. I honestly don't even know how their performance is this week, but that's not why we're talking. Like, I just want to catch up. Mostly those conversations are all personal. Sometimes at the very end, I'll sneak in like, anything I can do to support you in your role or anything you should know about, the position, but it goes so far. And that's where of just last year, I probably had somewhere between 60 and 80 conversations with my team members, multiple conversations. I know a lot about them. And so, and it's such a, and honestly, those are the meetings I enjoy. And I think it's, when you look at a leader who has 1,000 employees, that is not reasonable. But when you look at the director on the team who has 4 direct reports, that is very possible, making that meeting different than your check-in or your one-on-one performance review. Like it's truly just a catch-up. And I don't think enough people make time for that because we're so busy.
Yeah, I mean, you have to make the time because that's like really important. And like one thing you mentioned earlier is that you don't somewhat look at like metrics, like performance and everything like that. Like when you go into these conversation, which I love, because I think you need to have some of these conversations, like setting aside like KPIs, metrics, just having those natural conversation. And some of like following on that like human component of things in like an industry that's becoming like really like metrics, KPIs, like expectations. Is there like a way that you feel companies should balance like that human touch with obviously like the data-driven expectation that like a lot of companies have with their talent acquisition?
Yes. I think it's I like the way you phrase that. I always think of it as leading and having either like a head or a heart philosophy. And I think most leaders struggle with one or the other. And it is very, very hard to find balance and to maintain balance. So I'll share like a quick story of an example of when data actually steered me the wrong way. So shortly after our team went fully remote in about 2021, after playing the pandemic game for a year, we really realized that we were going to lose this connection because we'd been in an office together for so many years. And just the idea of what people are doing. People are asking questions, they're walking over to each other's desks, and you have more visibility. So we started looking into technologies that would help us with connection visibility. And I was so targeted on LinkedIn. It's like the minute I did one search, I was flooded with ads. But there was a company, they were designed specifically for recruiters, and they really sold me because they talked about how they gamify their technology. So
I've heard of that, yeah.
yeah, like we know what recruiting is, so we can give your team every interview they get on behalf of a candidate, they get 2 points. And we have this leaderboard and recognition. And I thought it was a great idea. Like, this is how we're going to see exactly how productive our team is, and it's going to be out there for everyone. We can create some friendly competition, and just less of the metrics talk because it will be in front of us. We'll have those numbers. Logically, that was the right decision. It was like, the data shows us that our team is disconnected. We're not as productive at home in those first couple months. What can we do? Oh, we could track it, and we can incentivize them to use it. So when we track it, it's, the results we want to see. Long story short, a couple weeks in to our new agreement, I started hearing just a lot of complaints, kind of like indirectly. So a manager would say, my team just doesn't, they feel very micromanaged. They feel like they went from like absolute trust and empowerment in the office to now being babysat all day. And after that, I had a couple one-to-one conversations with team members, explained to them why we implemented the technology, what our logical head-based goal was for it. And one of them was like, I would not work here long term if this is how it's going to be. Like, this is not the environment I thrive in. And that's all it took for me. It was just, it's like, okay, how can I use my heart to make these people feel connected? How can I check in with them, appreciate them, support them? And that was a situation that, yes, logic steered me to make a decision, but I would say my heart and the softer side of business is what steered me back to kind of, I don't know, just, rewinding, and we canceling our contract, and we kind of went back to normal with a lot of transparency around why we did what we did, why we are canceling it, and what we can do now to still solve for that feeling of disconnection if we don't have this technology. Look back, and I was like, God, I really thought I was doing everything right because I was looking at the numbers. I knew what the company needed, but that wasn't what my team needed emotionally, and it actually like pushed them over the edge. And we didn't lose anyone, but we could have.
And I see like directly because when you started talking about the idea, like I thought, oh, I mean, this is a great idea. But then when you started diving into more like what your employees actually thought about it, and then somewhat thinking about that thought process that a lot of people were like disconnected, pandemic, there was like that trust beforehand. But then you're like implementing a system to keep track of like their metrics, and it's like, okay, like am I actually being trusted to deliver on what I've always like delivered? And I think that's where you have to find that balance. Like you cannot go too much on the side of trying to like micromanage people, because as you mentioned, you'll push them away. And that's the last thing you want to have happen to your employees there.
Yeah, and I would say I probably err more on, and maybe it's my, because I'm a woman and just like maternal and feminine, but I err more on leading with my heart. And I would say it's usually someone on my team who's got to like flag me and say like, okay, before you make that decision, I know it feels right. Like, let's look at the numbers. Let's look at how this is going to affect the business and the bottom line. So it's finding that balance, but I think every leader finds it and loses it right away. And then you're just back on the journey to find it again.
Yeah, but I think it's important to have those people within your organization that can someone like say, okay, this is a good idea, but maybe we should look at this data as well and then make an informed decision based on those two components before just jumping the gun on anything. So I think that's important to have that right person there. And some like switching the gear a little bit, because you're obviously pretty involved in like logistics, supply chain space specifically. And there's been like a lot of challenges and like new things happening with like tariffs and all that fun stuff, unfortunately. Is there like you've obviously been in the space for like 15 years, if I'm not like totally mistaken. So you've obviously seen like things fluctuate like quite heavily. How are you somewhat seeing that somewhat evolving in like the next few years? And is there some sort of approach that you think companies in that space can take to somewhat, I wouldn't say like remedy, but somewhat help be more efficient, more thoughtful in their approach, et cetera?
That's a really good question. There's so many parts to it. Okay, so I want to come back to like technology
Sure.
and, AI and that big topic, but when you think of what I said before, like our industry isn't recession proof, just to recognize like the pain points in our industry, it makes so much sense. Like we had a global pandemic. We were all fearful and uncertain. And, once people the layoffs started and there, just became even more uncertainty, consumers slowed down their buying. They spent less, they bought less.
Yeah.
We were also, living in our homes with less needs for a year. And that then just triggers everything in the supply chain. If consumers are buying less, we need less raw materials, less manufacturing, distribution, transportation. And it's crazy because I'm at the very end of that as a
Yeah.
recruiter. So all that needs to happen before, the consumer demand needs to go up. So a company needs to now manufacture more goods, get all those goods in the right place, and they need talent to do that. When consumer spending is down and there's fear in the market, it literally trickles all the way to, someone's job. And we've
Yeah.
seen a lot of layoffs in our industry, a lot of bankruptcies, a lot of businesses close in the last 2 years. Now, technology in our industry has been a hot topic forever, but it hasn't always been embraced. So
Okay.
the business I worked for with my husband, this was late 90s, early 2000s, he had created a technology. Easiest way to say it is it was like a match.com. So companies that had freight went on and met companies that had trucks and they could negotiate and do their deal. And it was successful, but it was way ahead of its time. And so now I'd say in the past 5 years, that is what a lot of companies are doing in the brokerage space. Different ways of executing it, but it's this idea of, how can we make it easier? How can we use a platform to build relationships, to network, to collaborate? And so it's not that advanced of technology in that sense, but when you think of like the greater industry, robotics, and where like real automation in a manufacturing facility or distribution
Yeah.
facility is coming in, it is going to change the game. It will reduce headcount. I like to think that, AI may not take someone's job, but someone who knows how to use AI is who's going to take their job.
Yeah.
And right now, I'm still very optimistic that you need a human to make AI work. I hope that
Okay.
lasts, but maybe one day you need less humans. And so it's going to be really interesting in the recruiting business. I would say the way I'm interpreting it is to embrace technology, let it create efficiencies, let it make us more effective and agile, but it gives our team members actually an opportunity to increase the high touch service. So whereas before we had so many check boxes and, things, manual administrative work, there were clients that we provided more of a low touch service to, and now if I can free up 10 hours of time in my recruiter's week, it's like, doesn't mean they're only working 30 hours now. It just means that our service, because the technology is enabling us, we can really be consultative, advisor, strategic, and really help them understand why it's not just getting a warm body in the door. Like,
Yeah.
really what it's all about. That I don't think, I think a lot of recruiting is very transactional simply because there's so much to do. And this is hopefully going to put that industry in a better place because it's going to really spotlight human relationships.
Yeah, and like going back to your point, like the perspective that I personally have around AI is it's just going to amplify what we do. It's going to make us more efficient. Like I wouldn't see it as taking over like jobs where we don't have any jobs. I think as your point, people that know how to use it might be put in like different position, and then the people that like there obviously is some job that are going to be like replaced by it, but that job that is going to be replaced is going to be monitored by another job that someone has to monitor that job. So it's like a continuous effort that even if some job are removed, there's going to be other jobs that are going to be brought up, and then overall it's just going to help us be more efficient, and as a society we're going to evolve quicker. So
Exactly.
that's
And
my
it's
perspective.
not, yeah, and it's not new. I mean, I'm thinking to maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I had an opportunity to tour one of our clients' distribution facilities. I think I signed an NDA. It's probably expired, but let's just say they're a very, very large retailer globally. And I've been in a lot of different facilities, really like seeing the ratio of goods to people and the square footage ratios. And they had almost no people in their facility. And I was amazed. And a couple things. One, they were feeling it. It was a lot of robots. And you saw that one lonely person who was just literally babysitting the robots. But then there's also a whole team behind them who's really programming the robots and creating the integration and implementing that. And so yes, it did cut heads, but it just kind of changed the whole landscape of the way that company works. And that was probably 6 years ago. They were already using technology to enable them. So I don't know.
Imagine now.
We know what we know now. Yeah, I don't know where they are now. I should get back in there.
Yeah, that's fair. And like one other thing that I'd love to touch on as like I would consider you like a human connector at heart, like as like someone of one of your title. How do you actually approach like building like those relationships in a world that's becoming like way more digital? Going back to your point earlier, you mentioned that during the pandemic, you guys moved to like remote, and then there was obviously that struggle of being able to not micromanage people, but still keep those relationships that they feel like valued. Is there like any advice that you would give to leaders that are struggling to keep these genuine like connection with their team members without like someone like overmanaging them in any way?
Yeah. I mean, I could give you 8 hours of a response here, but
Worries.
I'll say something that might be a little unexpected, and
Okay.
it's being authentic and it's being vulnerable enough to put yourself out there. In 2020, I started posting content on LinkedIn after 10 years of using the platform just to find people and message them and do research. I actually started putting words out there and images, and it has really fueled the vast majority of our inbound leads. I was listening to, I don't know, do you ever listen to the Diary of a CEO
I
podcast?
know what it is, yeah.
Okay, you've got the same accent, similar enough. But he was interviewing a media expert the other day who was talking about this idea that when people put themselves out there, it creates this celebrity effect. By no means do I consider myself a celebrity, but it's this idea of if you did research on me, Zach, like you come into this conversation, if you went 2 weeks back in my LinkedIn, you know that I have three sons. You know that it was Allie's sixth anniversary last week. You know that I'm speaking in a conference. Like I just gave you so much because I'm sharing. And I would say that I had a major turning point where I started posting very prescribed content, how to negotiate an offer, how to, get ahead of the supply chain Q4 trends. And I started to shift and share more about me. I still am very private and I probably share 10% of my personal life on LinkedIn, but that I posted something, a video that my son put on TikTok that went viral. It went viral on LinkedIn. And that was the moment where I was like, wait, people want the human. They don't want the interview tips. They wanted to know that I was a mom. They in the comments and the business that came in and the relationships from this single post, and then those people have stayed in my community. So, long story short, I think this applies to clients, it applies to employees. Like I am putting myself out there. If you want to make a connection with me, you've got all the fodder in the world. Like, I like coffee. I drink McDonald's coffee, whatever it is. Like, and so I think that there is this idea of people who put themselves out there. I speak to my team on LinkedIn. Like, I say things on LinkedIn that I say to them. And if they didn't hear me say in the meeting, they'll see it there. And it's because I'm being authentic and I'm,
Yeah.
sharing a little more than just what a traditional leader would share. So I don't know. I think there's something about that podcast, just like I was like, oh, that's why, people get on a call and they're like, so how are your boys? Like, I've never met them. Now I have boys.
Yeah.
But it creates conversation and it shows interest. So
And that's actually like one things that like I've spoken to some other guests on like our podcast, and one of the things that I've been somewhat like realizing and seeing, and that's the authenticities is major. Like we're gonna be going AI technology. We have like videos. We don't even know if it's actually that person speaking, and just
exactly.
having like that
Exactly.
authentic component is gonna become really important. And to your point, I think like the main reason that people are like more engaging with like personal content, et cetera, is there's someone just resonating with that. Like it's like relatable. If
Yeah.
you post, like, I think there needs to be a balance where you are relatable, but you're still posting like educational, valuable content. So people
Sure.
get like the best of like both worlds. But people, if they're going on LinkedIn, a lot of them might just be at their lunch. They want to like disconnect from work. They want to see some personal stuff. Even if LinkedIn is considered a professional platform, I feel that a lot of people are using it more as like a social platform just to see like how everyone else is doing. A little bit similar to Instagram, X, Twitter, et cetera.
Yeah.
But that's like my perspective on that.
No, that's a good perspective. And I think that is very accurate. What I've learned is that you have to bring a professional story or learning or piece of advice or aha, something with it to LinkedIn. And you're not going to get canceled if you post too many personal things on LinkedIn. But anytime I post something personal, there are people that will comment and say, take it to Facebook. This does not belong. Like, I every time, and it shows me that they actually don't read the post because, the example I shared, like, it was a video of my son and his friend shooting hoops. They both shot the ball at the same time. It went into the basket, one after another, and it went viral. What I posted on LinkedIn wasn't, look at how awesome my son is that he created this video. It was, when I read the comments on X or TikTok, people were saying, like, well, how many tries did it take those kids? Or there's no way they got it on the first try. And that was my post on LinkedIn, is like, no, it took them hours to do this. There's no denying that. But look at what we can learn from these 10-year-old kids about teamwork and persistence and collaboration, because they got the shot they wanted and
Yeah.
figured it out themselves. And so that's kind of where I think about, if I'm talking about my kids on LinkedIn, it's really connected to me being a working mom. Or, so you
Yeah.
have to be mindful, because if you really want to build a community, people come for professional advice first, but they usually want to receive that through a personal story or connection. And people
I love
love,
the way you framed it. That's perfectly said.
yeah, people love high highs and they love low lows. So I'm going to
Yeah.
say, two best performing posts in the last month were when I had the flu. Like, it just went viral because I posted a
Everyone
picture,
has it.
literally like a picture of NyQuil and a flu test, and everyone's like,
Yeah.
oh, she's sick. And then I posted a happy picture last week of my son in his last high school basketball game, and people love that. So it's, you just got to figure out, like, what do you stop scrolling for and what
Yeah.
does your audience want? But let them in a little. You got to crack that door.
I love that. And I guess just like wrapping things up, I have like one question I'd be curious to hear your thoughts on. So just like looking ahead, because there's obviously so many things changing every single day, is there like a trend or like shift in like workplace culture that you believe is going to be really fundamental in changing how companies approach like their talent in like the next few years? Just to give you like an example, like I've seen people trying to have more of like a like an CEO, like founder brand to try to like recruit people, like build that culture that way. But I'd be
Yeah.
curious to hear if you have any thoughts on that.
I definitely think, yeah, that personal branding and like that human aspect is definitely going to be, something that we see a lot more in the future. And just embracing, I honestly think the future is going to be focused on flexibility. And I say that very broadly. Every human wants more freedom. There's no one out there who has too much time. And so people want work from home, but yet there's still a whole population of people who love going into an office or a facility. And In my industry, I can't say to my clients, you need to offer work from home if they are hiring a general manager of a manufacturing facility. They have to be there. But the job seekers don't all want to work from home. They want flexibility. And to me, flexibility is trust, autonomy, and empowerment. And so it's like it's not that easy to just be like, yeah, we'll let you pick your schedule. But if you let me pick my schedule, I guess you trust me and you know that, or if you're going to let me work from home one day a week, I feel empowered to work autonomously, and that's trust. So it's I don't know. That's an interesting question I've never really thought of, because I think the tangible answer is flexibility, but in order to achieve that, it's about trust and power, and really like, yeah, the autonomy.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say. Because I mean, it seems to fall all back onto like trust in a way. But again, flexibility. Some people have different like work style. They might be performing better, maybe more productive working from home. But obviously, this doesn't apply to every single industry. If you're a trucker, you probably can't work from home.
Exactly.
But
And it goes back to knowing employees as humans. If you knew if I'm an A plus employee and you didn't know I had kids and I called in sick 3 days in a row versus we had a conversation and I told you my house is full of the flu, I'm gonna need to take some sick days, like that is all of a sudden it's different. I didn't just skip work, I'm not interviewing, I didn't just blow off the day. Like, you have empathy for me and you know I'll make it up because we can have this honest conversation.
Love that. No, that was an amazing conversation, Charlie. I love that. Thank you so much for coming on the show. And if there's like anyone that wants to get in touch with you, I know we obviously talked about LinkedIn being probably the most active platform that you're on, but is there any other places that people should like find you at, reach out to you on, or?
LinkedIn is really where you can catch me. We have a company profile too, CS Recruiting. We put out a ton of good content on the industry and recruiting and newsletters, all that fun stuff. So check us out on LinkedIn or our website, and we'd love to hear from you.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time, Charlie.
Thanks, Zach. Appreciate it.